Hey guys, executive producer James Haney here. Well, it's the evening of April 30th, and we don't have an episode for you. I can't tell you how sorry I am to have to say that. Everyone on the team is working as hard as ever, and we do take our deadlines very seriously. We are incredibly excited about giving you The Man from Syracuse. We just couldn't make all the pieces fall into place on time. I can promise you that we are continuing to work our hardest making The Man from Syracuse the best episode it can be, and it's just taking a little longer than we thought it would. As a small token of our apology, we've decided to release another of our behind-the-scenes featurettes. I know, it's the third special feature we've put out since Trust But Verify, without a real episode. But it's still a pretty good interview, and I hope you enjoy it. If you stay tuned to the very end, you'll also find a full-length trailer for The Man from Syracuse. I don't think we've ever done one of those before. And I hope that will whet your appetite for the final product. So, keep the faith, and until May, Excelsiorites, this is James Haney.
Hi everyone, this is Mike Hennessy, co-producer of Star Trek Excelsior, with another look behind the scenes of the long-running audio series based on the Star Trek universe created by Gene Roddenberry. In this episode, I'm joined by the young man who's the creative force behind Star Trek Excelsior, James Haney. Since James has chosen to stay mostly in the background, I thought it might be interesting to learn just a little bit more about him.
I'm a college student up in metropolitan St. Paul, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I am a computer science major with a religious studies double and some scattered minors in liberal arts. And I am going to work after college for a well-known and local corporation to do some computer applications programming for them for, you know, however many years they'll have me.
So, James, have you always been a Trekkie?
My parents were Trekkies of various kinds from their days watching syndicated original series. And it came out of the womb, and I guess my first episode would have been Samaritan Snare back in May of 89, which tells you I am way too young to be doing this. I don't remember a time when I wasn't a Trekkie.
On the website www.starshipexcelsior.com, James says Excelsior started out as an internet role-playing game, and I figured an explanation of what a role-playing game is might be in order.
It's a group of friends who get together, and they all take on characters of their own creation basically pretend to be those characters in a sort of collaborative writing setting.
So how far back does the RPG version of Excelsior go?
It's had a rotating set of crew for about 10 years. People come on and play the captain and play the various officers. And I joined up in the middle of 2006 playing a brand new character of my invention called Alcar Dovan under the new captain, Captain Rachel Cortez, who was played by a nice lady from Canada. And some of our other friends joined up, and we ended up with the Excelsior game as you have come to know it in the audio drama.
But nothing lasts forever, and the Excelsior role-playing game seemed to be running out of steam. So James had an idea to bring in new players.
I pulled up with my friend and then executive officer, Alex Lorac, who was played by another guy from Ohio named Alex, and said, hey, why don't we make an audio drama out of this? It could be really cool. No one else has ever done it before, and it'd be the greatest recruiting tool in the history of role-playing.
So after a frantic night of writing, James had come up with a script, and shortly after that, a casting call on several sci-fi and Trek-oriented bulletin boards went out. 4 months later, the pilot episode was ready to roll. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Was it really that easy, James?
I thought, well, I can tackle this whole pilot episode more or less on my own. Maybe I'll need a little help from Alex. And then as we got into it, it turned out we needed a lot more help than we thought, because I didn't know what I was doing. He didn't know what we were doing. We were overworked.
Luckily, I, your friendly narrator, had just enough experience in digital editing from my years in radio to be able to help with post-production. The three of us worked as a team to turn out the pilot episode, and that set a pattern of teamwork that continues to this day.
We take the whole script, divide it up into scenes, and give each scene to an assigned post-producer. The post-producer will then take the dialogue and smush it together with background ambient sounds, special effects, and will clean up all the dialogue and space it all together. Every scene gets checked by a lot of people, and instead of one person working on a 60-minute episode, five people are working on a 60-minute episode, which allows us to concentrate a lot more energy and
sound strength on each individual moment. Then the scenes are shipped off to Gary Cobham, head of post-production, compiled into a final episode. I get a final review and a little bit of tweaking, and then that's the final episode product that you hear.
All of us involved with the production of Excelsior are very proud of our cast.
I think most of our cast turned out to be first-timers of various kinds. Mike Lieben had already been in like 9 dozen things, but and was had the experience that came from that. But our cast was very much just people who thought, hey, this would be fun, let's try it out, and who sent in an audition, have a really good audition, and turned out to be in the show.
The idea of being able to recruit voice talent from literally all over the world is really quite an interesting one, and really a phenomenon of the internet age. Mm-hmm. Talk about where some of your cast members came from initially.
Well, our initial cast, we had people, I think at one point we had people in every English-speaking country on Earth. We had someone in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, America, and England.
James says the ability to recruit team members from around the world is a huge advantage of the audio format as opposed to video productions such as Star Trek Phase 2 and Starship Exeter.
A fan film mostly has to be run by people who live in the same area, roughly, who are able to get facilities in the same area, who have access to equipment, and you end up with a very limited number of people who can participate in any given fan film project. So the audio drama has this huge, huge production advantage in that we can take in people from all over the world and use them all equally. You, of course, are in Florida and Southern California. Gary and Jim are up in Canada. And we're all communicating on a daily basis with this cast that exists all over the world.
Excelsior quickly set itself apart from the mainstream of Trekdom, both professional and fan-produced, by killing off the captain, Rachel Cortez, as happened in the original role-playing game. But James says that almost didn't happen.
Elise Krawick was a fantastic actress. The character was very cool. I liked her a lot in the audio drama, and I was starting to realize, hey, I don't have to follow this role-playing game as exactly as I had before.
But after much soul-searching, the decision was made to kill off Captain Cortez, and that led to one of the most dramatic death scenes in all of Trekdom, as Captain Cortez, played by Elise Krawick, laid the burden of command in pursuing the Sword of Damocles on her reluctant first officer, Alcar Dovan, played by Larry Phelan.
Promise, we'll try to stop you. He thinks he's right, but he isn't. You have to get there and find. Damn.
What is it, Captain? What do we have to find?
I can't remember.
We could have made a terrific team.
It wasn't ours to have. Man, I just felt the first twinge of pain. It's starting. Please.
I'm right here, Captain.
No, Commander. You see, I've always wanted to die. Alone.
I see. Understood, Captain. Understood. Captain Cortez, it has been both an honor and a privilege to have served with you. Peace and long life.
And you, Alcar Dovan, live long.
We saw some great storytelling opportunities if we killed her and we destabilize this whole crew. We throw this guy who does not want to be the captain, who's not really a very great captain except in times of great crisis, and this super inexperienced engineer into his position as XO, who shouldn't even really be chief of engineering in the first place because he's a lieutenant junior grade, for goodness sakes. And all of a sudden, this opens up a whole new world of stories that Star Trek has never touched on.
Another character that got eliminated early on was the narrator. For full disclosure, the narrator was played by yours truly. James says the problem was that the narrator kept getting in the way of the story's flow.
There are a number of fun little bits in the pilot where the narrator gets to jump in and make some random observation about what's going on in Al Cardovan's head. But as we went on, those moments just became they felt very intrusive when we listened to the final product. Even as early as the Valandrian expedition.
Captain, look.
Laroque pointed at a part of the wall which Cortez realized was actually a metal bulkhead melded with the rock. In the darkened section of twisted uranium, she was able to make out a few words.
NCV-83124. USS Oracle.
Warning. Holomatrix damage. Temporal transponder inactive. Repair required. Repair required. Repair required.
It just feels weird, at least to my ears and those of the ones I talked to. What worked in writing did not work in an audio format, because especially in a role-playing game like this, the writing gets very, very long. It's very, very prosy, and it sort of wanders around because when we're doing the role-playing game, we're just kind of smooshing plot threads together and trying to make it work. And when you're doing an audio drama like this, you need to be able to condense that into a much smaller space.
That's all right, James. I didn't take it personally. The Sword of Damocles is a sprawling story arc that could easily have turned into a big mess, but the individual plot points that seem so divergent will come together in a coherent fashion with the end of Season 3. James says the key to keeping the story arc on track was planning.
We had this sort of vague outline of what we needed to do in the audio drama, inherited from the role-playing game, and I was in the very privileged position to be able to sit down and write up a timeline for here's what's going to happen. From day one of There You Are, the pilot, all the way through the end of the series.
Listeners who have followed The Sword of Damocles all the way through know that two special episodes play a crucial role in filling in the background. The first was The Line, the first attempt by any group that we know of, amateur or professional, to produce a musical episode with original music. James says The Line actually started off as a quick one-off episode that grew into something else entirely.
So a couple months later, I said, you know, how about we come back and try to do a musical sort of episode? Because I've got this idea for a script. It's about Michael Liebman. It could use some levity because it's a dark script. And that quickly turned into The Line.
I'm reading signs of morphogenic structures. They follow founder paradigms.
Are you saying what I think?
Well, the readings are in sync.
Then has the Federation crossed the line?
What do you mean? What are these structures? Sounds like they might be of use.
It means, I think. I dare not say it.
Starfleet's turned to arms of ill repute.
Convincing cast members Michael Liebman, Kennedy, and Julian Bain to take a crack at singing was the easy part.
As difficult as it is to make a scene work just in normal time, it is 100 times worse to make 3 or 4 or 2 or even 1 person sing in exact synchronization with a musical track when the musical track is recorded by some guy in California and this person is singing on a separate day in Canada.
The next special episode, called Sunset, was just as complex in its own way. I asked James how Sunset became a standalone episode.
At first I was thinking, well, we can just put all that in as exposition in 306, but 306, The Man from Syracuse, is already chock full of exposition, and I'm a little worried about that. And I knew that at the time, so I was like, all right, well, maybe we need some kind of special episode. We need some kind of side episode filled with lots of Anbar flashbacks where we can kind of work all that into whatever the Excelsior's doing. We could work it into 301 with that whole mission briefing they do at the beginning, but then there wasn't enough space for it. No, this is not just something that is an offshoot of Excelsior that we're just telling you for exposition purposes, but it's a legitimate story in its own right. Because it is a legitimate story. I love the story of the Anbar. I would love to tell more of it, because there is a lot more of it out there in the back, the hazy reaches of my mind.
In addition to filling in the backstory of the Sword of Damocles, Sunset was successful in its own right with outstanding performances from Elise Krawick as Skipper Sam Cox in a passionate, extremely human role compared to the more cerebral half-Vulcan Captain Cortez and Joyce Bender as her strong-willed counterpart, Becca Sanders.
So what's the story? Am I packing or unpacking? Are we going or staying? Am I sleeping under the stars or under a... You know what? Never mind. I'm calling Cox. Captain, this is your colonial puppet government. Could you please give me an order that makes some kind of consistent... so my people stop looking at me funny?
Hi, Sanders. Here's one. Look up.
Say again, Ambar?
Look up.
What? Oh.
Everyone really stepped up and put out an episode that we couldn't have imagined a year before, with this totally other cast, with this totally other crew, with this completely other plot that we're introducing as if it's something that's going on. And I think we can prove we succeeded making it feel like a real story with its own weight because of the number of emails I got asking, where can I find the rest of the series? I don't want to listen to the finale until I've heard the rest of the show. It's like, yes, we have succeeded.
Perhaps the most unique of all the special episodes is No One Gets Out Alive, which was released on Boxing Day of 2009. It's unique in several respects. First, it is a show that takes place outside of the continuity of the Sword of Damocles arc. It even features a special appearance by Captain Cortez after she died in the regular continuity. It also is the only episode so far not written by James, and it's the only show so far not executive produced by James, since production and post-production took place while he was studying in Europe.
I always wanted to bring in someone else to do some writing for the show. I never particularly intended to come up with this whole serial drama where I'm doing every single script, but I wanted to, you know, broaden our show's horizons. So we put together this idea of a contest. We had a small judging panel, and we were off to the races. And thank goodness, you, Mr. Hennessy, agreed to step up and fill the role of executive producer. So we ended up with, in the end, a great script, No One Gets Out Alive by Chris Chan Roberson, and a great executive producer who kept the whole thing together while I was gone for those months. And then I came back, and we're back to normal life.
Even though Season 3 still has a way to go, James is already looking forward to Season 4, which he says will be quite different.
The Sword of Damocles is sort of the defining backbone of the Excelsior series, so you'll be seeing it again. But after the end of this season, in a very plot-intensive, very dark and heavy season, we'll be moving into Season 4 with hopefully some more... standalone episodes, some more episodes by other writers. I've asked Chris Chan Roberson back to do a script for us in Season 4, and a couple of others who will hopefully be writing some scripts for us. And we'll have a little bit of a lighter tone for a little while to recover from the weight of the Sword of Damocles. But it's not going to be gone until the series is done.
Like any effective leader, James is more comfortable talking about the people who do the dirty work to make the final product possible than himself.
Everyone is immensely generous with me, I'm not always on the ball, and everyone else I feel like picks up my slack oftentimes, and that's the reason the show continues to exist. It's not so much me as the fact that there are 50 people on this team who are able to pull together every 6 to 8 weeks and put out another terrific hour of Star Trek Excelsior.
One final footnote. You heard James mention that the Excelsior audio drama was meant to be a recruiting tool to bring new players to the Excelsior RPG. As it turns out, the audio drama has drawn a consistently larger audience over its first 3 seasons, but hasn't drawn any new players to the RPG. We hope you enjoyed this visit with James Haney, executive producer of Star Trek Excelsior. All of us on the Excelsior team, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll stay with us as Excelsior boldly goes where no Star Trek series has gone before. For Star Trek Excelsior, I'm Mike Hennessy.
I'm sorry, Asuka.
You're apologizing?
Not because of what I did, no. Because you're going to get an explanation. I had hoped to spare you that.
Commencing Night Watch, Stardate 42297.2. First Lieutenant Isaac Brahms commanding. This outpost was using an experimental power source. If it blew up, it would have left a crater the size of Nevada.
That doesn't explain how a dozen other outposts along the neutral zone were scooped off the faces of 10 planets.
Well, it's not quite how I envisioned my first command, but I can't deny I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, General.
Don't thank me yet.
Is that how you justified the New Victoria massacre, Brahms? Everybody dies, so why not today?
At least it's a philosophy. You just launched Galactic Ragnarok out of pig-headedness.
Gentlemen, please!
Death squads? Really?
That's a misnomer at best.
If you can't take a little bloody nose, maybe you ought to go back home and crawl under your bed. It's not safe out here. It's wondrous, with treasures to satiate desires both subtle and gross. But it's not for the timid.
For 3 years, you have known him, but you have never met him. Where will you be when the truth is finally revealed? Star Trek Excelsior presents The Man from Syracuse, coming soon to StarshipExcelsior.com.
Who then? Who killed you all?
The dark! Machines in the dark!